It's always been a problem. Very hard to show somebody who's really good and not be boring. And even the wicked people. That's why Mark Twain said, heaven for climate, hell for society. Only interesting people who knew were simple. Well, that's the standard of old passion ignorance anyway. Is it going around the country? Okay, so now today we're ready to begin our discussion on the mode of going around. Any questions about the mode of passion? Remember we made the point yesterday, you don't actually see it even with too much of its pure form. It's always amalgamated at this point with some amount of ignorance. The mode of goodness is even rarer. It's just not seen. Prabhupada said, you know, in our society today, there's almost everyone is a shudra with a few vaishyas. There are no kshatriyas, there are no brahmins. So the brahmana is the representative type, that phrase from Prabhupada, the representative type of the mode of goodness. They're just not around anymore. Those of us who go to have spent a lot of time on university campuses where people's occupational duties are numerical, one is shocked by the actual degree of passion and ignorance that are part of people's activities. I remember, you know, having gone through a whole course in St. Augustine with the professor did drunk. Because the course was right after the lunch hour, you know, before you had several martinis. He taught it all right. I didn't seem to hurt transmission of factual information. But acting people in their personal lives are scandalous. Anybody who's been in there knows it's a little disillusioning. Anyway, you don't see it. Although the occupational duty is there. So the general nature, this given in Bhagavad Gita, purest in the material world, nirmalatva, having the characteristic of purity, nirmala, without spots, stainless. And this interesting word that appears throughout the account of the mode of goodness called illuminating, prakasha, the Sanskrit word for illuminating. And this other interesting word, without sinful reaction, anamaya. I don't have diacritics, it's a long, second year long, anamaya. Anamaya literally means without disease. Amaya is disease. But it can also mean like a disease is also a kind of a sinful reaction. So generally, we're talking about the general characteristic of the mode of goodness is that that there's no bad consequences that follow from it. The word illuminating we'll have a chance to discuss later on when you see down here in the manifestations. This is always leads to the interesting question in everybody's mind when it says all the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge. And what people specifically wonder about is how does the rectum become illuminated by knowledge? It's really what it amounts to, since that's one of the gates of the body. People are always puzzled by that. So the word prakasha or illumination literally refers to the quality of light, the ability of light to reveal objects. Like kash, like, you know, Benares, Kashi means illuminated. You know, so Kash, this root Kash means to shine. And Prakash means to shine forth, a dynamic shining, Prakash. So it means the quality of light to illuminate, and then by extension, it means the quality of consciousness to become aware of things. So the notion is, with illumination, is that there's something present of which you're ignorant, and then because of Prakash, it shines forth. It becomes manifest. The soul is called Svaprakash, it's self-luminous. It's consciousness that's part of the soul that illuminates everything else, reveals its own existence also, self-luminous. So that's the notion. So it's illuminating. In other words, the more of goodness, things become known as they actually are. Ignorance and passion tend to hide or conceal the nature of things. But the mode of goodness has this quality of causing one to see things as they actually are. You'll notice, for example, one of the things that policemen know very well is the total unreliability of eyewitness accounts of accidents and things like that. And it's always interesting if you're in a position of management and there's some conflict going on or some dispute and you listen to all the parties, how it is that people see things in such, you don't even know you're in the same universe. When people give their different accounts of some event that happened. And generally you'll discover that the more people's strong feelings or emotions are engaged, the more partial or one-sided is their account of things. Or in the case of the mode of ignorance, they're just oblivious. They just, when things happen, some of the mode of ignorance, they're just not noticing. In the mode of passion, they're noticing. But the strong force of one's own desires makes you reinterpret everything in the light of your desires. So you don't see things as having a significance for themselves or going on really independently of what you want. So this is a distorting effect of ignorance and passion. So the mode of goodness, where there's detachment and yet alert awareness, then things are revealed. Now you see, the mode of ignorance sometimes looks like detachment because one doesn't care. You know, like people in the mode, I don't care about money, they say in the mode of ignorance, you know. I just need enough dope. I don't care about money. They're lazy. So they affect not to care. Of course, they're deeply, deeply attached to people. But it has that activity of being not caring because of nihilism or lack of interest or just sheer boredom. So the mode of goodness also will sometimes have the appearance of inactivity. But there's always, in the mode of goodness, alert awareness and a high degree of interest in things. People in the mode of goodness are not oblivious. People in the mode of ignorance are oblivious. People in the mode of goodness know what's going on. They're very, very alert. They see things as they are. This alert, wakeful, but detached consciousness. That's what's characteristic of people in the mode of ignorance. So that's what is meant, this illuminating quality in the mode of ignorance. In the mode of goodness is there. So it says, purest in the material world, nirmalatva. It's not completely pure. It's got a wash of ignorance over it too. Because it's not vishuddha sattva or pure goodness. It's pure transcendental goodness. The transcendental situation is called nirguna, without the three modes, beyond the three modes. But within the material world, this is nirmalatva. It's purest, prakasha, illuminating, and without sinful reaction, anamaya. There is a sense in which the mode of goodness is also sinful, because Prabhupada explains, in fact, he explains right here, I think in this volume, sinful activities are those activities performed in forgetfulness of our relationship with the Lord. In the material world, activities for material enjoyment, which are considered to be pious, are also sinful. Everything done here is done in the modes of material nature, and therefore all activities but service to the Lord are sinful. So, even the mode of goodness in one sense can be done for a selfish purpose, anything but the service of the Lord. So how does it binds or conditions the embodied soul? By knowledge and by happiness. Jnana Sangha, Sukha Sangha. So how can knowledge bind or condition? Prabhupada explains that in the purport. Knowledge is supposed to liberate, but it all can also says the effect of developing the mode of goodness in the material world is one becomes wiser than those otherwise conditioned, that is to say, conditioned by passion and ignorance. A man in the mode of goodness is not so much affected by material miseries, and he has a sense of advancement in material knowledge, the representative type, the brahmana. The difficulty here is that when a living entity is situated in the mode of goodness, he becomes conditioned to feel that he is advanced in knowledge and is better than others. And this way he becomes conditioned. The best examples are the scientist and the philosopher. Each is very proud of his knowledge. So that's the point. There's a lack of humility that can go along with it. You are, in fact, in the better position of others. So then you start to feel, I'm all right. I'm okay. I'm free from sin. He says one is more, the sense of happiness in the mode of goodness is due to understanding that in the mode of goodness one is more or less free from sinful reactions. So I remember as a child, for example, there were periods of times when I was very good, and having the opportunity to lie, cheat, or steal, I didn't do it. And I also went to church and Sunday school and read the scriptures, and I definitely remember enjoying feeling good, and also feeling kind of sorry for those other people who didn't feel so good, weren't so good. And that's the kind of a feeling that one has in the mode of goodness. But conditions, so they become attracted to working, and they become attached to their knowledge in the mode of goodness, and they have to take birth again and again in that way, because they want it. So that's the difficulty. So it does have this binding effect. The psychological type is that Prabhupada says one is happy, one is very active, and one is helpless. So happiness is characteristic of the mode of goodness. Because in the mode of goodness, you're not depressed like you are in the mode of ignorance. You're not agitated all the time like you are in the mode of passion. So if you're not agitated and you're not depressed, what are you? You're happy. You're not bored. Boredom is the mode of ignorance.
What is it when maybe you're in a blissful mood and you see that maybe another devotee in your association is depressed? Or isn't, you know, as happy, and you feel almost undeserving or guilty, but almost like your happiness, you can't even appreciate your happiness or enjoy your happiness or experience your happiness because of, you know, the other devotees that you have to associate closely with just aren't feeling that way.
Well, there's no reason why one should enjoy one's happiness either. That's also And if your happiness can be that much affected by it, I know, I mean, it's a fact that depressed people are depressing. to be around, and everybody knows that. But if you're actually, well, and if you're situated that way just because of being in the mode of goodness, you can by that association, you can lose your... you can become affected. If, however, you're happy through doing devotional service and you persist in doing devotional service, you won't become affected. And usually a devotee is not concerned with that, you know, this will bring me down or something to associate with these people, but really, how can I help them? He sees that people are unhappy or suffering for no reason whatsoever. It's just all in the mind. All in according to mental conditions that they're unhappy. And therefore, he feels very sad for them. So it says here, with the mode of goodness which is luminous, pure, and auspicious. And again, this notion of luminosity. Predominates over passion and ignorance, the person becomes endowed with happiness, virtue, knowledge, and other good qualities. That's the general character of the person. I think that's virtue, knowledge, and other good qualities. So then it's very interesting here. But then the Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita that the work, one is satisfied with one's work, even if there's no money or if there's no particular result, the work itself is satisfying. And that sometimes you tend to see with people who do especially intellectual labor in art or music or science. They're so into their work and they get satisfaction from that rather than from the whatever is produced. So that's characteristic of one of the mode of goodness. So the manifestations, all the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge. Now, I think this could make sense. Of course, when we think of the senses being illuminated by knowledge, or the gates of the body, those are the gates of the active, the knowledge-receiving senses. The Prabhupada says, one can see things in the right position, one can hear things in the right position, one can taste things in the right position. So in that way, the knowledge-acquiring senses are correctly situated. And as far as others, one becomes cleansed inside and out. In every gate, there is development of the symptoms of happiness, and that is the position of goodness. So the general effect of the mode of goodness, for example, the knowledge-acquiring senses will become illuminated because the intelligence which helps those senses operate will allow you to see things in the right way, hear things in the right way, and so on. that's how they'll work. On the other hand, the active senses are run by prana, by the vital air. And so when one is in the mode of goodness, the vital air, the prana in the body, tends to be regulated, steady, undisturbed, not agitated, because of being in a generally regulated condition of life. So that the active senses, they function smoothly in a regulated way without a huge amount of disease and so on like that, disorder caused by mental perturbation and so on. That's my understanding. I talked this over with Gopi Puranadana at length. We seem to come to agreement on that. Yeah.
In text 13, in the surplus, it says that one can control his mind, senses, and mode of goodness. So why is it that even as devotees, we struggle so much to control our mind and senses, but at least what we want to do is above that platform?
Because you're not in the platform of the mode of goodness. Okay. Because when the mode of passion is there, the senses are really turbulent. So, most of us, by our birth and background, are not situated that much in the mode of goodness, and we have to put ourselves there by practice, by following the practice. The person in the mode of goodness is by nature regulated. So we're not by nature regulated. But we have to learn how to be regulated. Sometimes we require somebody to tell us get up, want to go to bed, do this. Gradually have to hire. And then we can do it, but you know, there's a certain inertia from the past that's there. And the mind, which is the repository of all ideas of sense gratification, is the last to get the word that we're changing our modes. And so it's a struggle against the mind, wants to continue in the mode of passion and ignorance, even though by our superior intelligence we're behaving like someone in the mode of goodness. It feels a little unnatural. It feels to us that the natural thing is, you know, to get up about 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning. That's what's natural. That's not natural for somebody in the mode of goodness, but it may be natural to us. No, we don't start to have fun until the sun gets down for at least 3 hours. But maybe that was our previous our previous life. So that's you have to change all that. So it takes a while. So that's what it means. All the gates of the body illuminated by knowledge, prakasha. Develop this quality of illumination. Then here, this is very interesting. Bhagavatam, when the consciousness becomes clear, and then the senses become detached from matter. These are the two things that happen in the mode of goodness. Consciousness becomes clear, senses detached from matter. Then, with reference to the material body, one experiences fearlessness. And with reference to the material mind, one experiences detachment. That's what this means. So both there, the senses are detached from matter. I mean, one experiences fearlessness in the body. So the normal condition in material life, when one considers one's situation as embodied soul, is fear. Always, because the body is vulnerable and it's part and parcel of material nature. It's doing all kinds of things out of your control. So when anyone thinks about the body, then immediately there's an overtone of fear because of the fact that it's basically going to die and it's subjected to the onslaught of the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. So fear. But when one is in the mode of goodness, one experiences fearlessness. with reference to the body. So that should be a sign of the development of goodness. One, because why is that? Because of detachment and detachment from the mind. And normally the mind we're all absorbed, but when one develops the mode of goodness, one becomes detached from the mind. In other words, one can. Sometimes the mind will operate on its own. It'll suddenly fill with anger, or suddenly fill with lust, or suddenly those things will happen. One is in the mode of goodness, and this happens. It's as though one is watching it happening to somebody else. You don't get implicated. It's happening somewhere else. This is explained in the Bhagavad Gita, like the ocean that receives waters from the rivers but is not disturbed. So that a person who's in the platform of self-realization, even though there may be agitations arising from the body or the mind, that person is not involved in those agitations. So this is detachment. Because sometimes the modes are working on the mind and body on their own. So the detached situation is you don't, not into it. You stay aloof from it. And the other characteristic is that one has the opportunity to realize Krishna in that mode of goodness. Okay. So that's a nice description. Then Bhagavatam lists qualities, various qualities that are characteristic. Sometimes these are simple Sanskrit words and they've been expanded a bit in translation. That's because they're following Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and other commentators to give a fuller sense of the meaning. So, sama, dhamma, mind control, sense control, control of the mind, control of the senses. Tikshaha, tolerance. Discrimination. Tapaha, which means austerity, is here given as sticking to one's prescribed duties. That's the austerity that one is able to undergo in the mode of goodness. Truthfulness, mercy, smriti, which is literally memory, means careful study of the past and future. In other words, a person in the mode of goodness is always examining the past and therefore also the future, because the future is just the past redone. As Vyasadeva saw the future because he knew the past. Things move. So if you know the past very well, also you'll know the future. So careful study of the past and future. That is to say, with a detached state of mind, one looks at what's happening, see how things are going, and then try to understand the course of events in that way. This characteristic. Most people in the mode of passion are thoughtless. And of course, they're embarked on a project that a careful study of the past and future will let you know is impossible. That is to say, the project of becoming happy in the material world. Another characteristic, satisfaction in any condition, tushti. Not dependent upon external circumstances for happiness. Generosity, tyaga, giving us generosity. Renunciation of sense gratification, shraddha, faith, particularly the spiritual master, mode of goodness. Kri, which means shame or shyness, means being embarrassed at improper action. In other words, being, not that when something happens you're embarrassed, it's improper, but the idea of doing something improper is so embarrassing that you won't do it.
Oh, it's not after the fact.
No, it's before the fact.
It's preventative.
It's preventative, right. Even the prospect of improper actions is so.
Usually when you think of embarrassed, it has to do with pride. You know, mm-hmm. You're concerned about your image to the to others. That isn't the case with this one?
No, that's not what it means. Not just in front of others. You can actually feel shame
You're shocked that
even if nobody knows.
In other words, you're kind of shocked that there's maybe some tendency towards incredible.
That, or just the thought of it causes you to cringe. And then daya, adi, charity, simplicity, humility, and so on. And then svanirvritti, satisfaction within oneself. Any question about those characteristics? That's something else. Now, that's definitely a mode of passion. As long as nobody knows, you're proud. As soon as they know, then you're so ashamed.
So what about
there we see people who have no shame at all unless they're caught. Then they feel humiliated in front of everybody. Like these guys, you know, when they get caught, and they finally, when they go in for sentencing, you know, some usually middle-class people. And, you know, while they were looting the Savings and Loans Association or whatever, you know, they were very proud. But then as soon as they're caught, then they go in front of the judge and say, you know, the humiliation is punishment enough. Please don't give me 30 years. So that's a different thing. Mode of passion is they don't have to absolutely, it's only in front of other people's eyes and they get humiliated.
So it's like the mode of goodness. If you're, you know, you shouldn't be in that room taking some Mahamar right now. You know, you're thinking like, I shouldn't be doing this, but, you know, is that goodness and that's your passion?
Then you're doing it anyway?
Yeah. That's ignorant thing, you know. That's ignorance, I guess.
Well,
that's
interesting. You're knowingly breaking the rule. And you know you shouldn't be doing it.
Well, it depends. If you make up a reason why it's actually following the rule, then it's the mode of ignorance. But if you know it, you're doing it anyway, that's the mode of passion. But once you make up a philosophy that you believe in to say it's okay. I think this word greed shows up where it is among feminine things, among women. No, that's not one of the ones. No, it's not. That's Brithi is there. So the result of the mode of goodness is it is pure, as we heard before, and it brings happiness. The actual product is knowledge. You go upward to the higher planets, to the heavenly planets, or to higher and higher positions in the evolutionary scale. Faith in the mode of goodness. Here Bhagavad Gita says, in the mode of goodness, one worships demigods. In fact, the worship of the demigods. It says the devas. That can, of course, include Lord Vishnu. Sometimes included as a deva. And Bhagavatam says directed towards spiritual life. Those in the mode of passion, they worship the demigods with their idea is fruitive. The mode of goodness is not so fruitive. It's done because it ought to be done. See later. The food, mode of goodness, we all know this, juicy, fatty, which means milk products, wholesome, pleasing to the heart, increases longevity, that is, it's healthy, purifies existence, gives strength, health, happiness, satisfaction. Bhagavatam says wholesome, pure, same thing, and obtained without difficulty. In other words, you take what you can get. It's not that you go through a whole big thing to get, you know, your rare this or rare that, or truffles or whatever. You have to send these pigs out to dig them up, or dogs. And the harder it is to get, the more you want to have it, all that kind of stuff. So, food in the mode of goodness is simple and not.
wholesome, not so much designed as to give immediate pleasure to the senses, but it is just to purify existence and increase your health.
Say we have the devotional service to the monks, prasada. Is it offensive to consider that? But often we'll see that experienced devotees will be quite discriminatory what they'll take as its effect.
Well, as you get older, you have to do that anyway. When you get a sugar intake, it has to go down. Well, among other things.
It seems that devotees will develop kind of borderline offensive vision.
You have to be careful like that. It's prasadam. Like Lord Chaitanya and his associates would not comment on prasadam until a week passed before they finally say that it ain't too much salt. That's clearly said because they were just honored. If something was wrong, it was burnt or too much salt, they wouldn't say anything. I remember in the early days, someone who was training up a lot of people used to fling it against the wall and say, Krishna didn't eat this, which is the wrong lesson to teach. Terrorize the cooks and serve it to everybody.
Make the cookie the whole breakfast.
Yeah, something like that. But I mean, that's not quite the way to train people up. I don't know if you can declare exactly that you made a mistake, Krishna didn't need it. But anyway, Lord Caitanya's policy, just to keep everybody in the right mood, they wouldn't comment. They wouldn't comment, this is good prasadam, this is bad prasadam, this is too salty, this is burned, too much carb, or something like that. Just honor it. That's the safe course.
It's also described that if one has, I'm not aware, but if one has, is advanced and has, I think it's in the CC, so faith in prasadam, there's different descriptions, like whether it's old.
Yeah, they don't count. That came out, when I was a new devotee, this is in 1971, they used to have this institution called Merge. That is to say, prasadam was never to be wasted. And so, the Sunday feast, the guests would come and they would leave stuff on that plate. And it would all be collected together and put on a big plate. And then Monday morning, that's what you had to eat. And if there was still some, before you could take anything else, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and as long as it lasted. And we had to do this, eat this called merge, we called it. It was all merged together. And, I did it. And then one day, I had a piece of merge in my mouth and was chewing along and there was something in there. And it was bubble gum. Somebody had let it, and I started gagging and choking. And I just refused. I couldn't eat it anymore. I just refused to eat it anymore. And then the word came down from Prabhupada. Somebody had finally said to Prabhupada, look, Prabhupada said, no, you don't have to do it. He said, it depends on your faith. And I said, well, boy, my faith, that's maybe for Sodom, but that bubble gum. But if your vision is that it's for Sodom, then by all means, it's not like that because people have eaten it, it's not for Sodom. There's the story about Raghunath Das. He used to take the stuff that even the cows had refused. But he would wash it. Of course, you have to, rice, when it spoils, becomes poisonous. You don't wash it off. But anyway, he would wash it, and he'd wash the rice, and there'd be a little kernel there, and he'd eat it. Then Lord Chaitanya said, what, you're having a feast? And you're invited me. So, that's definitely there. That's definitely there.
Is that another devotee? Outside the houses of all the Vaishnavas, and they like a bow.
Yeah.
And then wait, how long it takes? shot of all the Vaishnavas in Bengali way outside the house.
I wouldn't mind, you know, doing that if everybody was Vaishnava. Well, some of the people that come to Sunday Feast, you know. That's what we used to do. That's what Prabhupada said about that. Sono Prasadam is in a different category altogether. Now you may have doubts because of the consciousness of the cook or the pujari, the state of the kitchen, whether Krishna actually accepted. But the best safe thing is to just accept it as prasad. Try to get management to fix those things. If they want to become a manager yourself. Sacrifice in the mode of goodness. It's performed according to scriptural direction. Always, people in the mode of goodness, they very dispassionately follow scriptural injunction. People in the mode of passion, they follow scriptural injunction, but it's always a hassle. The brahmana is the type of, representative type of the mode of goodness, because there may be a whole bunch of things to do. You know, like going on the altar and doing a series of rituals or whatever. They just do them, you know. Person in the mode of passion always wants to get through it to get on to the next thing. That's the way they are about everything. So what is the next thing, the ultimate next thing they're trying to get to? They don't know, but they're trying to get through it and get on to the next thing. They're always, you know, in a hurry. But a person in the mode of goodness, it is the scriptural injunctions and does them as a matter of duty. And by those who desire no reward. That's how they perform them. They're very careful just to do things right, and accept authority. This is the way it's supposed to be done. That's the way you do it. Doesn't look for shortcuts, fast ways around it, ways to get out of it, and so on. Austerity, executed with transcendental faith. Without desire for fruits, for the sake of the Supreme. That is, not for one's own sake, or not to cause harm to somebody else.
So this seems like should accept it already.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? The Supreme, however, it may be also done for the sake of liberation, or for the sake of transcendence. Some ways, you see, the abode of goodness may, sometimes, especially in the Bhagavad Gita, when Prabhupada starts to get enthusiastic about the mode of goodness, his commentary make it sound just like, you know, transcendental. And certainly it's close enough. I think I may detect a tendency there, going through the Bhagavatams, looking at things, that as the course of Prabhupada's translation progresses, he tends to be more friendly about the mode of goodness. Observing, you know, that it needs to be given more emphasis for his disciples. But anyway, he talks about it that way. Certainly, some activity, many times the activities that are transcendental will give all the appearance of being a material mode of goodness, although they may not be. But the same transcendental activities may also appear to be passionate, or even on occasion, ignorant. We'll talk about that tomorrow.
So that kind of lends support to the notion that things that are wrong, that bind you oneself, the mode of goodness, are that they may very well be temporary for the individual. Yeah. Or they may give rise to a sense of superiority, which is a form of ignorance.
That's right.
But then in and of themselves, they're...
In and of themselves, they're all right. But what they can do is they bind. You become attached to knowledge. You become attached to goodness. And you then forget that you're in the material world. That is, there's a rough curse. But we'll see a little later, it'll become a little clearer exactly what some of the problems are. And I wonder how better to keep moving if we're going to get through it.
Charity given out of duty, again, without expectation of return, as in a mode of passion, at a proper time and place to a worthy person, all done according to scriptural injunction, in other words. Renunciation performs prescribed duties, doesn't give them up like those people in the mode of renunciation, passion, and ignorance. He performs them, but only because it ought to be done. That's the thing. It ought to be done, therefore do it. And he renounces material association and attachments to fruits. Now see here, when you come to knowledge in the modes of goodness, we see it says here in the Bhagavad Gita, it's just one undivided spiritual nature seen in all entities, concerns the spirit soul beyond the body. So typically knowledge in the mode of goodness is focused on one undivided spiritual nature. In other words, a Brahma body. Not necessarily Maya body. If there's a Maya body, then there's mode of ignorance is involved. You understand the difference between a Brahma body and a Maya body? A Brahma body is one who's focusing on liberation and is not interested in the varieties in transcendence, but is only interested in this one undivided spiritual nature. He does not, however, claim that Krishna is product of the illusory energy. That the Mayavadi does. He focuses on one undivided spiritual nature, but then goes on to make a philosophical claim that Krishna is a product, or variety is a product of illusory energy. And so that's different. So this Brahmavadi, when you can concentrate on the impersonal Brahman, but without committing any offense against Krishna, the Mayavadi. So that's the knowledge in the mode of goodness, is this kind of Brahmavadi platform. And there it's called absolute knowledge, Kaivalya Jnana. Here it says in the text, absolute knowledge is in the mode of goodness, knowledge based on duality in the mode of passion, and foolish materialistic knowledge is in the mode of ignorance. Knowledge based on me, however, is understood to be transcendental. So there it's clearly differentiated. The knowledge concentrated upon me is nirguna, without any material qualities. Whereas kaivalyam jnana, knowledge of transcendent oneness, is sattvika.
I just had an incident question, but are there any examples of famous personalities who are Brahma bodies?
Famous personalities who are Brahma bodies were Sananda, the four Kumars, anyway. they were Brahma bodies. And Shukadeva Swami was a Brahma body. So that when they heard about Krishna, they became devotees. That's different from the Mayavadis, who are the worst offenders. Your Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says they take birth as stones and trees on account of being so much greed. So there's quite a difference. For both of those, both the four Kumaras and Shukadeva Swami were perfectly situated in Brahmana realization. And then they had some encounter with Krishna or his narrations, and they became attracted to Krishna. Those are two instances that I know of. Here it says action, work, regulated, performed without attachment, without love or hatred, and without desire for fruited results.
And it says in the Bhagavatam, as an offering to Krishna without consideration of the fruits. It doesn't mention in the text the difference between work and the mode of goodness, which is an offering to Krishna without consideration of the fruits, and transcendental. Purport tells us, ordinary work performed as an offering to God without desire for result is understood to be in the mode of goodness, whereas activities of devotion, such as chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord, are transcendental forms of work beyond the modes of nature. That's in the purport. So that would be a difference. That means that someone would have transcendental work as part of their day and also work in the mode of goodness. Or my own intuition about this is that if one is performing this transcendental work, then if he does other things and offers the results to Krishna, that's also transcendental. But if he just does work and offers the results to Krishna without hearing, chanting, and so on, then it's in the mode of goodness. But just that's my own intuition about this. It's not that, you know, one can be Mangal Arati to 8 o'clock transcendental, and then it goes down to the mode of goodness until the evening program or something, and then it pops back up from the transcendental. That's the idea of that. A worker. It's very interesting. Here's the without association with the modes, it says in the Bhagavad Gita. I forgot the Sanskrit, but I checked it out. That's what it says. Although we're talking about actually being in the modes. Mode of goodness. That's 18:26. Yeah, it says Mukta Sangha, liberated from all material association. Without association of modes, without false ego, with determination and enthusiasm, or without wavering in success or failure. That's the general characteristics. But here in Bhagavatam, it makes a distinction. A worker free from attachment is in the mode of goodness. A worker blinded by personal desires is in the mode of passion. A worker who has completely forgotten how to tell right from wrong is in the mode of ignorance. But a worker who has taken shelter of me is understood to be transcendent to the modes of nature. So the specific thing is, you can be without association of the modes, but if you haven't taken shelter of Krishna, then it's still considered to be in the mode of goodness. I would think that without association of the modes, it's passion of ignorance. Has to. Buddhi, understanding, by which one knows what ought to be done and what ought not to be done, what's to be feared, not to be feared, what is binding, what is liberating, that's discrimination. Determination, that's already you see in the worker. Unbreakable, sustained by steadfastness in yoga practice, controlling the activities of the mind, life, and senses, those are. And happiness in the mode of goodness is derived from self-realization. Atmabuddhi prasadacha. It's born out of being able to become atmarama or take pleasure in the self. So that happiness may be like poison in the beginning. Poison means that it may involve some physical austerity, but it's like nectar in the end. What happens if one practices physical austerities is that when one is focused on the body, you know, like the effect of freezing cold water on the skin, for example, that effect is like poison. But if one discovers after a while that associates freezing cold water on the skin with the arousal of Krishna consciousness in the heart, then actually what happens when one begins to relish freezing cold water on the skin. So in the beginning it is like poison, but in the end these physical austerities become associated with advancement in Krishna consciousness, and therefore actually the devotee likes them. That's what happens. If you're just in a concentration camp and have freezing cold water on the skin, it doesn't get you anywhere, then of course it'll be like poison all the way through. But if those austerities foster Krishna consciousness, then you'll develop what's called developing a taste. You'll develop a taste for austerities. The taste is not because you like to feel pain or suffering, because you like the advancement that comes from performing austerities under a strict vow. And similarly, enjoyment, if there's some opportunity for material enjoyment and you find as you succumb to it, your Krishna consciousness lessens, that material enjoyment will again start to appear to you as unattractive. Because what you're into is consciousness, what it does to your state of consciousness. So you just lose your taste for it. Worship of Krishna in a mode of goodness, with the loving devotion, offering prescribed duties without material attachment. Bhagavatam. Yeah. See what he says here. I don't know if there's any distinction. I don't think so. But it's talking here about worshiping with prescribed duties. Anyway, with devotion, offering prescribed duties without material attachment. Then, we're running late. Devotional service in goodness, passion, and ignorance. Bhagavatam says one offers the results of activities in order to free himself from the inebrieties of fruitive activities. That's why he offers the results. But further, there's a distinction made here. Another verse distinguishes this from transcendental, unadulterated devotional service. Unadulterated devotional service, the manifestation of that is exhibited when one's mind is at once attracted to hearing the transcendental name and qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is residing in everyone's heart. Just as the water of the Ganges flows naturally down toward the ocean, such devotional ecstasy, uninterrupted by any material condition, flows toward the Supreme Lord. In other words, so devotional service in transcendental plant form is spontaneous devotional service, Raghunuda, bhakti, causeless and uninterrupted, unmotivated and uninterrupted. Simply a spontaneous attraction to Krishna. If there's something less than that spontaneous attraction, and there's therefore some motive, it's considered to be still in the mode of goodness. So the mode of goodness, when it increases, the strength of the demigods increase. They go up. They're tied into the mode of goodness. They're produced out of the mode of goodness the same way that the mind is. The state of consciousness that mode of goodness produces is alert wakefulness. The residence of one of the mode of goodness, preferred residence, is the forest, whereas the transcendental temple is the residence of the transcendentalist, wherever that may be. Yeah.
I have a question concerning these kinds of beings of power. I'm not sure I understand this whole category. What do we consider that when persons on the earth behave in the mode of goodness, then the demigods become more powerful?
Yeah, they will. Yeah. Here's a verse from the Bhagavatam. I don't remember the Sanskrit. In the beginning, there is Lord Brahma and the Prajapatis. In the middle, there is Vishnu and the saintly kings. And in the end, there is Lord Shiva and the atheist full of anger. that's discussing the cycle of the universe. So you see different groups are prominent at different times in another way. So sometimes, whenever, say on Earth, that the mode of goodness is predominating, then the demigods will have more influence.
Like in Satyayuga.
Like in Satyayuga. They visit all the time, they come here, they have babies all over the place, like that. Now they don't come. Now we're being invaded by Rakshasas and funny people and flying saucers, which are coming up from the lower regions. That's what's happening. The Rakshasas are coming. This is the influence of the mode of ignorance.
Sometimes it seems that the devotees...
There's a here somewhere. You read Sadhguru's book on flying saucers. I'm not joking.
This state of consciousness produced.
You think you're scared now?
Another topic of state of consciousness produced. It seems that some devotees that are obviously very well situated in the one of goodness are a little otherworldly. They're not so aware of.
You mean spaced out?
Yeah. They're not really conscious so much of what's going on. And it's not like. But they're, alert to spiritual.
Yeah.